Welcome to Podcraft, honing the art of podcasting. The bite-sized show that covers one topic in depth each series. Your complete podcasting guide. Podcraft brings the pieces together so you don't have to. And now your host, Colin Gray.
Hey, folks, and welcome to another episode of Podcraft. I've got a bit of a funny one for you this week. This is outside of the normal run of the series, so if you're listening to this up to date, live, then the current series will continue on the next episode. This is a bit of an in-between episode. But I wanted to publish this one because I've been thinking recently about publishing a bit more, not personal exactly, but a bit more of a history. So a bit more information about myself, because a lot of people are asking at the moment through the email newsletter, through a few other forums, a little bit about how I got into podcasting and just sort of a little bit about my experience, my background, that type of stuff. So I was recently interviewed by Harry Duran from Podcast Junkies. So you can find that at podcastjunkies.com. He interviewed me just around my general introduction to podcasting and what I'm doing these days with Podcast Host. So I thought it would actually be good to put on Podcraft on the show here to basically act as a little bit of an introduction to myself. It sounds a bit weird talking about this myself and a bit narcissistic, but people are asking, so I thought it'd be nice to have somewhere to direct them. So if you have been directed here by me to get my background, to get my introduction to podcasting, everything that's going on right now, then welcome, and thank you very much for being interested. So I won't hold you back much more. This episode really is just all about my history, my background, and how I found this podcasting game.
The Podcast Host, honing your skills. Get your free equipment buyer's guide at thepodcasthost.com/kit. Get the right equipment. First time.
So, Colin Gray, thank you for joining us on Podcast Junkies.
Lovely to be here, Harry.
So we were referred by a friend, Liston Witherell.
Indeed, yeah.
Yeah, I was doing a bit of research on how the intro happened, and sometimes, as is the case with guests that are sent your way, you have to keep track, and thankfully Gmail has a fantastic search feature.
Yes, indeed. Figure out where on earth it came from.
Now, where are you from?
I'm from Scotland, so originally Dumfries in Scotland, so that's southwest of Scotland, down the bottom corner. These days, I'm in Dundee.
In Dundee,
yes.
And how? And that's where you're born and raised?
No, well, I was moved around a lot. Actually, my dad's a greenkeeper, so he tends golf courses,
okay.
And that job seemed to come with it quite a lot of moving around. So it was a fair bit of moving. I've lived in Prestwick, other coast of Scotland. Lived in Ireland for a while, France for a little while. So born and raised in a few different places.
Do you have fond memories of any of those particular locations?
Yeah, all of them, I think. Prestwick's probably the sort of the most long-term one when I was a kid. So that was, that's where I made most of my school friends. But living in Ireland was pretty good as well. I enjoyed that. That was where we got to live in a golf course for 4 years and get to know some goats very well. There was some neighbouring goats that would wander into our garden. So that was always interesting.
I'm trying to think of the guests that we had. I've up to about 40 episodes in. So I did get to interview, I don't know if you've heard of James Schramko.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, he's fairly well known in the online marketing circles. And
yes.
he's in Australia, as you know. So trying to find time with him was a bit challenging because
yeah.
I think I on my end, it ended up being a 1:30 in the morning
really?
Call as the only slot. And when he's like the premier, when he's the guest and he's someone that you've been trying to get for a while, you tend to accommodate whatever time is more convenient for him.
Yeah, absolutely. I know we're only 7 hours apart, I think, currently, so it's not
tenable. Yeah. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
Although for the listeners' benefit, we've tried to have this call now about 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, it does cause some trouble, but it's always the same, isn't it, when we're internationally podcasting.
Yeah. So you've been podcasting since about 2007, 2008, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yep.
So talk a little bit about your story. I know that you started out doing some web design and then you got into podcasting. But for the benefit of the listener, talk a little bit about your tech background.
Yeah, sure. I started out, back in about 2004 was my first sort of proper getting into work. And that was web design at the time. I just finished a master's with a university in Edinburgh, and I just started working away as a web designer then. I soon discovered, of course, that going straight into freelance work is pretty tricky because you've got no contacts and not a lot of credentials behind you. So I ended up working about half and half, half freelance doing web design stuff where I could find it, and half teaching at a college. So I was teaching web design and media development, that type of stuff, doing a bit of flash animation, that kind of thing. But that kind of led me through a few different things into a bit deeper into education, and I ended up working at a university in Edinburgh for a while, where that eventually took me to podcasting, because the university decided that they wanted to get into podcasting themselves and use podcasting as an educational tool. So they tasked me with finding out how to podcast, finding out how to use it to teach students, and then to actually teach all the lecturers. So it's part of my job at that university to teach everyone how to podcast and run courses on it, essentially. And I did that for about 4 or 5 years with that university.
So that's interesting. What year was this when they asked you to get into podcasting?
Yeah, that was 2007. So I'd first discovered podcasts in around 2 years before that, I think about 2005. I had to look this up recently, actually, so I actually know. It was about September 2005 I found my first ever podcast. So I'd listened to them for probably about a year and a half before the university decided they were going to use them.
What was the podcast, do you remember?
First ever, it was Boag World by Paul Boag and Marcus Lillington.
Okay, so for the benefit of the us Americans, you're going to have to explain that topic.
It's a web design podcast. Just so happens that it's called Boag World because it's Paul Boag. It's just the second name. But it was a really good podcast, actually. It was one of those examples of a podcast that is successful more because of the banter between the guests, between the hosts, than anything else, than the topic. I mean, they knew what they were talking about. The topics were great, but it was Paul and Marcus were just, they were good pals, and they just had a lot of chat, and it was just good fun to listen to.
So at the end of the day, it almost becomes a bit like Howard Stern here in the States, where you end up coming for the personality.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You got to know the guys and take part in their banter and everything. So it was good fun.
I think now we take for granted how relatively easy it is for folks that are interested in podcasting and familiar with technology and web design and social media to get up and running. But I imagine at that time, it must have been somewhat of a challenge for you to figure out what was the first thing to do and where to start, and even simple things like a microphone that we take for granted. All that was brand new for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So 2007, I can't remember how I learned. I mean, I think it was just looking around on the web, finding random articles, but you're right, there wasn't half as much around then. I had the advantage that it was funded by the university. So I managed to get some decent kit right off the bat. Although we did go quite over the top, we ended up getting what was it called again? Oh yeah, the Marantz. So you know the old Marantz massive big recorders. Never remember the code of them, but they're the ones used by like the BBC and stuff like that. So these huge big things that are literally the size of a shoebox that professional audio recorders would hang from a strap on their back, and then tend to have like the big shotgun mics on a boom arm and the big sort of furry cat windshields. It's the kind of thing used by them. So we had one of those as a digital recorder connected into about £200 condenser mic that we bought a stand for as well. So it was absolutely ridiculous, the kit we started off with. But when your public money's funding it, you might as well get the good stuff.
it sounds like no expense was spared, which means that you hit the ground running in terms of sound quality.
Oh yeah, I mean the sound quality was great. So that was a good thing at the start. But probably my production skills and my presentation skills didn't quite live up to the sound quality. So.
What were you editing in back then?
Back then it was Audacity. That was the first thing I heard.
Oh, it was Audacity. Okay.
Yeah, totally.
Okay.
Well, do you know what? I say that. I mean, if somebody tells me that Audacity didn't start before until after 2007, then I'll have to, I couldn't think what were we using.
Yeah, someone might hold you to that.
Yeah, exactly. But I'm sure it was Audacity. That's certainly what I remember starting out with. Just editing that the whole time. Yeah, I still use Audacity to this day. Mixed in with a little bit of Adobe Audition.
I think you just had the benefit of getting started so early, and there was not a lot of folks listening, I imagine, at the time, and not the sort of feedback that you can get now because everyone and their mother has a podcast.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the thing with it then was actually we weren't really broadcasting any wider than the university. So that was okay. my first few years of podcasting were actually just internal, really. It wasn't a public thing. Well, I say that, but it was available publicly. Students would download it and anyone could download it. It was just that it wasn't of much interest to anyone outside the university. So it was a bit of a funny situation, I suppose, until I got into more wide podcasting. But yeah, it was certainly we got a lot of feedback, developed a lot of skills around then, working with a lot of different lecturers, helping a lot of them to develop their own presentation skills, editing skills. So that kind of, that pushed me forward really quickly, having to teach other people how to do it.
Were you the only host at the time, or were there various hosts for the show?
We had a few different people working on it, actually. I would tend to do interviews. So I would go around the university and take interviews with lecturers on what was working well for them with teaching, what kind of stuff they were doing with their students. And we even, do you know what, there was, it was Edinburgh Napier University, and they actually have a good media department. So they have a little radio studio. So there's a few times I got into the radio studio and actually did proper interviews in there. So that was always interesting. Talked to a few ex-radio professionals. So that was cool. Learn from them on sort of presentation and structure and stuff like that. Yeah,
and so I imagine you were in an environment that had really good sound quality.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that radio studio was actually a properly professionally produced, soundproofed, full-on mixing desk and massive mics and stuff like that. So that was as good as you'd get in the BBC type of thing. So yeah, that was really good.
I think for podcasters, whenever we have the opportunity to end up or record in one of those environments, we feel like we're a kid in a candy store, because I recently had that experience with some friends who have a local production studio in Los Angeles.
Really?
And they have a proper podcasting interviews set up, and they've got the studio quality Shure mics, and I was listening to the quality of the interviews and the folks I was interviewing on the other side, and everything just sounded so pristine and crystal clear. It was fun.
Yeah, sometimes you think that, we've done stuff with our rooms, like hung up curtains or, turn off the computer, all that kind of stuff. You get in the wardrobe and hide in the coats, that type of thing. And you think you're getting good quality, but actually, you compare it to a proper studio and it's just ridiculous. It's great.
Oh, it's funny, because for the benefit of us Yankees, I may have to have a glossary of translations. So, so kit is technology, and wardrobe is closet. So.
Oh, yes, indeed, yes.
But it is funny, because I do have a friend of mine that I've met through the podcasting circles. His name is Chris Arone, and he started out, I think his first 30 or 40 episodes were in the closet or in the wardrobe, as you say.
Yeah.
And I think it was the only place that he could find that he wasn't getting the feedback, the echo in the room, and the quality of the sound was the best that he could get in that environment.
Yeah, I think people always think I'm joking when I say that, but it's actually a serious suggestion. And
yeah,
I have
exactly.
People that I work with that do it. They actually just get their little digital recorder, their microphone, get a chair into the closet and just record in there. And it works brilliantly. It's like so sound damped. The best you can do apart from a proper studio. Well, spending money on like wall paneling and stuff like that. But yeah, it's good. It's effective.
I think the only challenging thing would be that you go in there and you end up in Narnia.
Yes, indeed. It might disappear, and then suddenly a lion steals your microphone, and all goes wrong.
Well, at least you have something to podcast it about then, right?
Well, that's true. If I ever get a live lion roaring in my podcast, I'll be doing well.
So what happened after that then? Because then you did that for a period of time and then moved on to something bigger and better?
Yes, indeed. So next, I suppose, let me think about my chronology. I started the podcast host. So the podcasthost.com is the company I run just now. And I started that while I was at Napier because we had been using a certain podcast host, which I won't name because I'm about to tell you they were rubbish. we were using a certain hosting platform, which was just so unreliable. It was ridiculous. They're still around today.
I was just about
well.
To ask that they're still around.
No, they're still around. They do very well. I'm not going to slag them off, but yeah. Anyway, they just went down for like literally days at a time, and you wouldn't be able to get the support service whatsoever. The platform was based on WordPress, but it was literally a 3 or 4 year old version of WordPress, really, really heavily customized. It was just awful. And because of my web design background, I thought, you know what? I can set up a WordPress multi-site. I can run some hosting like this myself. So that was essentially the first incarnation of the podcast host. It was really a platform set up by me to host our podcasts at Napier, and a podcast that I was then thinking about starting myself outside of the university. And it kind of grew from there, and I actually started offering it more publicly, and that's what grew into the business. That I mean, we do a lot of different stuff today. Don't actually concentrate on hosting as such anymore. That's kind of how it grew. And then ended up setting up some podcasts ourselves then at that point, I guess.
What's interesting is that you actually started the site, the podcast host, with the intention of hosting podcasts.
Yes, indeed. Yeah.
So, is that still part of the business? Are you actually hosting podcasts?
Kind of. Yeah. Nowadays, I moved out of hosting as such because it's such a low cost service. It's so commoditized that it was just really hard to make any money out of to be scalable. And you know what? The likes of Libsyn and Blueberry do it so well. And they've got the scalability in there. So I just decided it was pointless trying to compete with that. And do you know what? I'm not really that interested in running a hosting service because it's all power to people that do it, but I just don't, it doesn't set my heart racing, you know?
Yeah, no, and so, it's a type of service that from a customer service perspective, it must be just a pain to keep track of all your customers and keep them happy, and every little thing that happens, they're always banging down your doors. Help me with this, help me with that. My podcast is not up, and it just becomes more trouble than it's worth.
Absolutely. That's exactly what it was like. It was just, I mean, people are only paying $5 or $10 a month for it. And then, so one email or one phone call basically wipes out 2 or 3 months worth of profit if you count it against your time. And it's just, it was ridiculous. So yeah, jumped out of that. These days, I still do a bit of hosting, but it's only for clients, mentoring clients or production clients. So part of what I do is helping people to create podcasts, to launch them, and then to actually produce them ongoing. So people send me the audio files, and my business does the editing and producing and publishing for them. So if people are doing that with us, then I host their podcasts that way. So the only people we host these days are ones that I'm working with on a kind of a wider scheme, whether it's mentoring or production.
Yeah, so I'm hosting with Libsyn, and I've been pretty happy with them. In case they're listening and feel like they need to sponsor an episode or two.
Yeah, sure.
It's always good to give them a nice call out on the show.
No. Yeah, absolutely.
And then the other thing is I test other platforms. So I syndicate out through SoundCloud, YouTube, and Spreaker and Stitcher.
I'm with Blueberry mainly, so they're kind of my core media hosting, and then I put stuff on SoundCloud as well, and I feel it's just with anywhere that we can find it, really. I haven't got as far as trying to repurpose to YouTube yet and putting video to it, but I'm interested to try that actually to see if it works.
Auphonic is a good tool for syndicating content because it takes in if you put in a nice artwork, and I think it's 700 by 394. I actually have it memorized by now, but if you put that artwork into Auphonic and then you connect your YouTube account, it'll send out a static image. It won't be obviously a video, but it'll be a static image that fills up the entire window.
Okay.
And then your audio is just playable, so people have at least your artwork to look at while they're listening to the episode.
Yeah, see, I've always considered that you would have to make some slides or something, or at least put some changing images. But yeah, I suppose if you can just put up an image, because a lot of my Podcraft shows, actually, that's the podcast I do on podcasting through the podcast host. A lot of the shows that I do for that are really short. My kind of principles are keeping it as short as possible, just so that people can fit them in. So actually, just like a 12 to 15 minute episode with just artwork in the background might be all right. I can maybe get away with that.
Yeah, I think it would work too. And, and the other thing is that it, depending on how detailed you make the description, I would imagine since it's a Google-owned entity that there's some SEO benefits to having that content on there as well.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Yeah, I'd say so. I mean, even if you get found, well, it's another place to get found, isn't it?
Yes, that's true. Good thing. I think it's what helps is when you have the mentality of being as visible as possible, as you mentioned, because a lot of people say, well, I need to drive everyone back to my iTunes or to my Libsyn feed, whatever your RSS feed is, so that you're counting your downloads. And I think people get so obsessed with counting the downloads or from Apple that they lose sight of the fact that they should increase their reach as wide as possible.
And then
just work to have a consistent call to action in the show so that they can, so people, no matter where they're listening, there's always the opportunity that a listener will turn into a customer if that's your desired outcome in the long run.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, if your aim is to get people back to your website, then put the show everywhere you can and just say in the show, oh, so my website's here. Have your lead magnet or whatever in there to persuade people to actually take it as well.
And then so that you mentioned Podcraft. So talk about the origins of that show.
Great. Okay. Yeah. So with the podcast host, as I kind of transitioned out of the hosting side of things, I was looking at what else to use the site for. And one of the most popular aspects of the site was always the articles on how to podcast. I had just started to log things for myself, really, because I'm a bit of a geek, really. So I love the kit. I love the equipment, experimenting with microphones and mixers and all that kind of thing. And because of the university attachment as well, I got to try quite a lot of different stuff just because of the funds they had for it. So I was writing articles on the microphones and all that kind of stuff. So that stuff just kind of naturally started getting some traffic in and some questions. And I just suddenly started to think, well, what's the point in writing about this? Well, not what's the point in writing about this, but I should be podcasting about it too.
Yeah.
So the first series of Podcraft actually was a course that I had developed for the lecturers at university. It was a 10-episode series designed to take you from complete beginner guide to launching your first episode. So it was all 10-minute episodes. The first one was, what is a podcast? Next one was, what benefit is this to me? Then you go on to stuff like recording environment, so how you set up your room, like we were talking about earlier. Then how do you set up your microphone? How do you script? That type of stuff. So it was 10 episodes, all about 10 minutes long, which took you right through to actually launching your first episode. And I took it really from there. It's kind of, I suppose that's my education teaching background, that I really make Podcraft a course-based show. So it's always based around seasons. Season two was around equipment. So that was a full guide to podcast equipment. First episode was microphones, then you go into mixers, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, that's kind of the approach I've taken. And it seems to, people quite like it. I quite like the fact that it's quite segmented, it's quite categorized. So when people find the show, they don't have to search back through all the episodes to find stuff about, say, setting up a podcasting website. They just have to go to series three and they just follow through that whole series and they get all the information on it, as opposed to, you know, a sort of standard approach to podcasting, which is just to change topic every week and just talk about whatever you like at the time. There was nothing wrong with that, obviously, but I just quite like the kind of more focused season-based, category-based approach.
Yeah, I like that aspect of it, because I've seen some folks tend to do that, and actually you're in good company because startup.
I was before them.
You could always say, yeah, that concept of the seasons. And it's interesting because you had not only the background, but you had the content, because you come from an education background. So the concept of putting things in lessons and putting things organized into more consumable bite-sized pieces is something that just came to you naturally.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was just the first way I thought to do it. I didn't think to do it any other way, just because I'm used to creating courses. I'm used to creating educational resources, and a podcast to me, or my idea behind the podcast, was teaching folks. So that's just what popped into my head.
Yeah, because you saw the podcast as another medium in which to broadcast your lessons.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
And so you finished up season four now?
Yeah, I just finished season four, which was around planning and presenting. So that was something that I thought was possibly one of the less covered aspects of podcasts. And I think a lot of people talk about equipment. A lot of people talk about monetization. They talk about getting started, but not many people actually think about how to present and presentation skills and how to plan an episode and stuff like that. So it was something I wanted to cover, and I got a few good guests on for that one.
Quickly, for the benefit of the listener, just if you could just go through each of the seasons and what the main topic was that you covered.
Yeah, sure. So season one was the beginner's guides. That was launching your first episode. Season two was equipment. So that was literally going through everything from an episode on mics to an episode on mixers, an episode on digital recorders, and then all the little bits like cables and boom mics and boom stands and all that kind of stuff. Season three was starting your podcasting website. So that was a 20 episode guide to getting set up from complete scratch in WordPress to having a really well set up, well optimized, well sort of tooled out podcasting website that's really good at capturing audience, turning them into listeners, you know, using call to action and subscribe buttons and all that kind of stuff. So that was really start to finish of setting up a website by yourself. And the fourth one was the planning and presenting one. So that was just interviewing a few different podcasters about their tips on how to create great content and how to get it out there to people in the best possible way. There was stuff in there around things like storytelling. And in fact, I had one from Liston that you mentioned earlier, our mutual friend, on copywriting. So he was talking about how to plan out podcast episode names and to plan out the show notes and things like that, so you can actually capture people more effectively.
I have to make sure to get caught up on those.
Great.
So what do you have in store, or from a planning perspective, what are you thinking about for season five?
Well, I've got a couple of ideas. I think season five is going to be monetization. So monetization is obviously a big topic on everybody's lips.
That's a big topic.
It's always something that comes up, isn't it? So what I'd love to do is to get a series of episodes around each type of monetization type, obviously. So I'm going to cover stuff like Patreon, sponsorship, and various other ways, selling a product, a service, that type of stuff. But leading on from that, I want to get lots of case studies with people that have monetized. So I want to try and get people on that are in really kind of niche industries or really strange industries, or, you know, people that have made money out of a podcast that you maybe wouldn't necessarily have thought of. So for example, there's a lady that I'm contacting at the moment that runs a pet sitting agency. So she just runs a company that basically hires out pet sitters. So people will go and feed your cat while you're away on holiday for a week. And she's, so I want to talk to her once she's launched it about how she's going to make money out of this, like how it's going to sell their services. So that type of stuff, the type of thing that you wouldn't think you could make a podcast about.
So just to be clear, she has a podcast about pet sitting?
Well, I think it'll be more about pets, really, because the target audience is people who have pets that will need them looked after at some point. So if she can attract in listeners that are just interested in pet news and, you know, looking after a dog or a cat or whatever, then that'll naturally lead them towards her pet sitting services.
Now my interest has peaked. Is the podcast live yet?
No, it isn't. No. So okay. I've been talking to her about it, and I'm interested in sort of following her through the launch process and seeing how all it works out. So I think that could be a really interesting case study. That's my kind of intention, is to find people doing things like that. Like you say, you're sounded a bit incredulous.
Funny.
Yeah. I want to find people who have that kind of podcast and talk about how they are monetizing it.
Yeah, it's always interesting, because I'm a huge fan of trying to niche down as much as possible, and I always give the same example. But when I was at Podcast Movement last year, mm-hmm. which is the Podcasters Conference here in the States, there was someone who told me about a podcast that was about coroners.
Sorry, about what?
Coroner.
Coroners, coroners, like dead people.
Dead people, exactly.
I actually thought you said corners, like as in the corner of a square. It's like,
that would be, yeah, that could be something too.
It's a bit of an esoteric subject, I'm not sure. Yeah.
The Plaza podcast.
Yeah.
but the coroners one, it's called Coroner's Corner, which is a mouthful.
Very good. That Liston would like that title. That's a good copywritten title.
Yeah, that's true. So I may have some people to send your way. I have actually an interview coming up with Jennifer Briney, mm-hmm. and she has a podcast called The Congressional Dish.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And she's taken it upon herself to imagine this, actually read the content of the bills that are presented by the House and the Congress here in the States.
Okay, right.
And then the things that she finds is lots of examples where our representatives, our fearless leaders, if you will, mm-hmm. have taken it upon themselves to sneak a lot of pork into a lot of these bills. And right. she's sort of a crusader in that respect. And I think what she's doing is a service that's so interesting and valuable for the folks that do listen, that she's been able to have a bit of success with donations.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. So yeah, that's exactly the type of thing I'm talking about. That's a subject you wouldn't think you could even make a podcast about, never mind make money out of it. So yeah, excellent. Yes, pass our contact details. That'd be good.
Yeah. So how's the timing on that look for season 5 then?
I have the first interview in the bag already. So I'm hoping to put that out in about 2 weeks' time. So we'll launch a bit then.
Yeah, monetization is just a slippery slope, and it's the holy grail, right, for podcasters, because everyone that gets in there is like, okay, maybe number one is like, how do I start and what mic do I get? And then I think probably number two is how am I going to make money on this?
Yeah, yeah. I think the thing is, most people don't make money out of the podcast itself, do they? Most people make money out of the audience that they grow through the podcast that then leads to their services or a product or something similar. But there's even just the basics, I think, that need covered. Like, if you are going to go out and look for sponsorship, what kind of price will you start with? Like, what kind of CPMs are good or acceptable? Or how many numbers do you need before you can start thinking about sponsorship, that type of stuff? So that's the kind of stuff I like to cover. It's the total basics, and then move up to the more advanced stuff after that. So hopefully I'll give people an idea of how to get started in it.
I think what will be interesting is the fact that you're using a wide variety of examples so that people don't assume that the most basic one and the most easiest one to chase in terms of the sponsor on your show or the advertiser, that's probably just one of a lot of different opportunities you have for trying to make money on the show.
For sure. And I think it's probably one of the hardest as well. I mean, I think sponsorship really is... It's for people who have reasonably large audiences, and even then it's still quite tricky to find. Whereas if you just build your own product or you have a service or something like that, it's a lot more straightforward.
And I think it helps if you come into podcasting with a skill set and then you want to use the podcast as your platform for communicating the knowledge that you already have in another field.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, there's a big difference, isn't there? Because there's a lot of people... that the kind of split is that you have people that podcast on hobbies. So people that podcast about a TV show or podcast about mountain biking. And then you have people that get into podcasting to teach because it's a subject that they teach anyway. So a photographer, for example, Julie Christie, who does an excellent podcast called The Tea Break Talk, she teaches photography in real life, and now she's teaching it on a podcast. So actually that's going to monetize by sending people to her courses. So yeah, you come in with a skill set, like you say, and it's much more, much more obvious where you're going to make your monetization.
Yeah. Make sure you send me the links for her show and, any of the other ones that are online. I'd love to include them in the show notes.
Yeah. Happy to. More than happy to.
So that was a nice segue into your other podcast, because I know you have one on mountain biking and one on gaming as well, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think the first one I started actually before Podcraft, we got it, just me and a few of my friends do a lot of gaming. So a bit of a geek at heart, like I said. We do a bit of board gaming, card gaming, that type of stuff. So we just got together, started to record a weekly podcast on gaming, which we called Dicing with Design, which I think Liston would like as well.
Okay.
But we ran that for a while. It's a lot less regular these days. We've all got kids and stuff now, so it's we don't get to game as much, never mind actually meet up to chat. But the mountain biking one too, I ran for a while just because that was a hobby of mine too. And that was probably the most successful podcast I've had in terms of numbers and stuff like that, and engagement too. It was just a gap that people weren't really covering.
Yeah.
So I enjoy doing them. Again, I don't really keep up with either the mountain biking one or the gaming one as much as I should, but I'm planning to start getting the mountain biking one out a bit more regularly again soon.
Yeah, it's interesting that when you become a podcaster, everything becomes an opportunity. Everything becomes a topic that you feel like you can podcast on.
Yeah, definitely. And you have to hold yourself back, don't you?
Because you
know that I struggle with the ones I've got live already, never mind new ones.
Yeah, I mean, even if we had just the one, there's so many different things that we could do to improve the quality of the show, the content, the guests, you know, the website, the show notes, the marketing. It's just endless, right? It's almost like when you buy a house and you have and you realize that this is going to be a project for you for as long as you own it, and there's always be stuff to tinker with.
Yeah, absolutely. There's always new techniques coming out to promote it and stuff like that, isn't there, that you can work on?
And new technologies, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like we're using PodClear. Give a shout out to PodClear, using that to record this episode. So that's a new thing to try out. But yeah, you can't get caught by every shiny object in the world.
Well, what's happening is it's a bit of a gold rush in the podcasting space, and everyone and their mother is coming up with some variation of a tool that they think is going to be the next best thing for podcasters. And so I think we all come at it with, especially the podcasting community comes at it with a sense of apprehension, because the last thing we want to do is tie our show to a service that's not going to be around in 3 months.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think... Yeah, do you think in sort of a sense that the success of Serial and Startup and stuff like that, it's been a bit of a double-edged sword in that sense? We've got all these things that are now taking up our time and everything. But then on the other hand, obviously it's great that new money's coming into the industry and podcasting's getting more mainstream and a bit of more sponsorship money, that type of stuff. So yeah, comes with warnings though, I guess.
And I think it's helpful for those of us that are in the podcasting space that also have a service that can help people get on board. You mentioned that you're doing that yourself with your website and with your service in getting folks introduced into the world of podcasting and getting them set up and helping them flatten the learning curve, as my friend Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting likes to say.
Yes.
So I wanted to ask you about what American influence you've had in terms of podcasting, and how much of them were a part in your learning about what shows were out there and how shows were being produced.
Do you mean in terms of podcasting in particular?
No, in terms of shows, where there, I know in the beginning you tend to listen to local folks or folks that are in your community, or mm-hmm. are podcasting about topics that relate more to what you have an interest in. But I was wondering what shows that you listened to at that time that were more American based, and what shows you listen to now as well.
Yeah, sure. Well, I was thinking about, like I said, I was thinking about my start out in podcasting recently, and Boag World was certainly the first one I ever listened to, but I'm reasonably sure that the second podcast I ever subscribed to was Internet Business Mastery.
Okay.
By Jeremy and Jay, isn't it?
Yes.
In fact, that was really, they had their stage names originally, didn't they? But they changed it to the proper names.
Yeah.
More recently. But yeah, that was a really good podcast on basically starting up an internet business. And they took a very, I probably learned a fair bit from them actually in terms of the approach they took. They keep things very simple and very straightforward and have good calls to action in their shows. And I really enjoyed that show in the early days. And that's certainly American, isn't it? Moving on from there, in terms of podcasting shows, I mean, I've listened to all of the standard how to podcast shows, like Cliff Ravenscraft was probably one of the first ones I listened to, and it moved on to all the rest. I really like Ray's show. I really enjoy the Podcaster Studio with Ray Ortega.
Yeah, Ray's been on the show, on my show as well. He's
I noticed that in your list, actually. Yeah, exactly. I think that's why, because he just seems like a really nice guy, and he seems to have a very similar approach to podcasting and interest in podcasting to me, as in he's a bit of a geek too. He likes the equipment, but actually...
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, but he still thinks that it's good to just keep things simple a lot of the time too. So yeah, I like Ray's show. These days, most of the shows that I listen to are business related in general rather than podcasting. Mm-hmm. So I listen to a lot of shows like I know everybody's talking about just now, but the Tim Ferriss show, for example, mainly for the
fantastic show.
Yeah, exactly. Just the guests that he can actually get through his fame, I guess, is just, I mean, he's got an advantage there over the rest of us, the people he can get on, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, for example.
Yeah, a little bit of an advantage there.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to be coming on Podcraft anytime soon.
Aim high, Colin, aim high.
Well, exactly. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I shouldn't be so negative. But I don't know, the lessons that he teaches through how to be successful are really good. So I like, these days, I really like more inspirational shows like that, and things I can really learn from in a kind of grander sense than just the minutiae of podcasting and equipment and stuff like that. Like Startup, we've mentioned Startup a few times, and the story of that, just the getting a picture of how a company starts, how equity is negotiated, how partnerships are formed, how, you know, the problems of growing, of expanding, that type of stuff. That's the kind of thing I'm interested in just now, because I suppose that's maybe more where my business is at now, that I'm past the kind of initial stages, more looking at growth and expansion and product development, things like that. So I guess that's where I'm up to now.
Yeah, it's interesting because our interests, like you said, tend to mature. And now it's almost like we're listening to podcasts as a way of figuring out how people handle different guests or what their interview skills are like, or even just listen to the quality of the production of their podcast as a way of something to shoot for.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right there. That's a good point. It's just the fact that we're both producers, it's good to listen to something like Startup to actually learn how they're layering the music and the feeling and how they're building the story and stuff like that. It's really interesting.
Yeah, sometimes they're so polished that you're just wondering, okay, I've really got a ways to go here.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? I did an experiment because I was contracted by a university to do some educational podcasts for them recently. And they had a reasonably big budget. So I thought, do you know what? I'm going to pitch properly polished, produced episodes, just six of them. Yeah. And put a lot of time into it and actually produce something that I think is of kind of a standard of Startup. I'm not claiming to have reached their standard by any means, but, I discovered that I can produce something maybe 20 minutes long that is equivalent, maybe not as good in terms of the storytelling and things like that. That's the bit I need to work on. But in terms of just sheer production, quality of production, I think it got to the same standard as a Startup episode. And it took me, for the last episode, it took me about 8 hours for a 20-minute episode.
That's what I was just about to say. The production time becomes exponentially longer when you try to do an episode of that caliber.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And you know what? That's with one interview as well. So that was me trying to tell a story with just myself and one interview. So chopping up an interview into little sections and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's what I mean by it certainly wasn't the storytelling equivalent of a Startup or a Serial, and the way they pull in like seven or eight different narratives during one episode. But yeah, even just editing up one episode into a Startup type format, as in it's, you know, telling a story and cutting in little bits and putting music over the top and all that and stuff, that still took blooming ages.
Yeah, I did something similar with Dave Jackson from the School of Podcasting, because I was inspired because he tends to do a lot of that himself. So I said, well, for his episode, I'm going to go the extra mile. And I pulled in I think a Jerry Seinfeld quote. I found the video that he was talking about. I put that in there. There was some music that he mentioned. I cut that in. I think three or four different times where I was making commentary. That's what it was. So I would say, and then here's when Dave talked about this. And I normally don't do that, obviously, because I'd never get an episode out. But I was just motivated to do that there. And it was fun to do. And then I quickly realized if I want to have more than 10 episodes on my show, then I better get moving. And it's not something that I could... a model that I could adopt going forward unless I was making a lot of money.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just not sustainable, is it? Unless suddenly it's your full-time job.
Yeah. But it's fun to do. It's definitely fun to do.
Oh, yeah. It was great fun trying it in that instance. And I'm really glad I did it. And I'm even more glad I got paid to do it. So
that's even better.
I think that's the only way I could have done it, actually, because I just couldn't. The time that was involved. See, that 8 hours I mentioned as well, that was just editing. So that didn't include the chasing up the interview and planning for the interview and then recording it and stuff like that. So, I mean, it was probably close to 2 days in total. So, I mean, I just couldn't afford to take that time out for just a wee experiment that ends up in a 20-minute episode. But then again, you talk about, I mean, the engagement that something like Startup and Serial and that have generated. If it's likely to generate that much engagement, that much hype, then maybe it is worth investing that much time into your production and your interviewing and stuff like that.
Yeah, that's true. You just have to find a wealthy sponsor.
Indeed, yeah.
And universities are actually not a bad place to start.
Definitely, yes. I would agree. Go and chase some university money,
Peter. Yeah, some universities are a biotechnology company or something.
Yeah, exactly.
people with money to burn.
Yes.
I think what's interesting is as bigger and bigger players get into it, and I think what happens is bigger companies that want to start podcasts see that as a marketing expense, and they don't really see a podcast as a revenue source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and it changes the mindset, because you're not trying to monetize or stick affiliate codes on your website or promote Squarespace.com.
Yeah, sure.
You're really just focused on the content, and a lot of times the only thing they have to sell is the institution themselves.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's something that's coming up with me a lot recently, actually, is the tying it into your content marketing strategy. So it's your overall content marketing strategy for the whole company. And yeah, you're absolutely right. As soon as they can get that tied in alongside blogging and maybe videos and even just getting out there and meeting people at networking events and stuff like that, it just becomes a lot more viable or a lot more sustainable.
Yeah, I agree. So coming back into how you help folks get started with podcasting, what do you think are the biggest mistakes people are making when they're starting their podcast?
I think there's two or three things that people do or biggest mistakes right at the start. The first one is, and everyone, it's nothing new to anyone, but perfectionism. So there's so many people that come to me for help, and they've been planning their podcast for the last 6 months. They've recorded about 10 first episodes, and they've just never put them out there. And the thing that I always tell people is that you should assume for the first 10 episodes that nobody's going to be listening. So it'll take that long for you to get any kind of decent audience, unless you already have an audience. I mean, it differs if you're somebody that blogs and have an audience on your site, you already have like a mailing list of 5,000 people. This is a bit different. But talking about somebody who is starting to build their business, starting to build their platform, that type of thing, you've got probably 5 to 10 episodes whereby you should just try things out. So record an episode and stick it out there. I mean, if it's absolutely horrendous, obviously don't put it out there, but try to just put things out there. And the only way you're going to actually build that confidence, that presentation style, that skill in presenting and planning and all that kind of thing, is by doing it. And there's so many people come to me having not done it, not released, and then therefore they don't get any feedback. So they don't discover what works. They don't get anything back from the few listeners they do get in the early stages, which teach them what they're doing well, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and what they should build on, what content they should keep putting out, that type of stuff. So I think that's certainly the first thing. Beyond that, I think it's equipment. So I think a lot of people dive in and buy themselves a few hundred pounds worth of equipment straight away. They buy themselves like a complicated microphone and recorder setup, or even buy themselves a mixer thinking that the audio quality makes the biggest difference to their content. And by all means, to an extent, it does. So, I mean, if you've got terrible audio quality, you're not going to have people keep listening. But as long as you're at an acceptable standard, which doesn't take much, then people will listen because the content might be good. So, well, yeah, as long as your content's good, people will keep listening. The problem is that when you dive in with that much equipment, that much complexity, it just makes it really unsustainable. It just makes it really hard work to record. And the big thing for me in the first 10 episodes, another thing I always tell people, is that you need to make sure it's as easy as humanly possible, because this is the time when you're just learning it, when you're building your audience, you're not getting much feedback. So there's not really many external factors that are driving you, motivating you to keep going. So if something's difficult, if you've got to set up your mic and your mixer and make sure your settings are all right, and it's just complicated, then you're much less likely to do it. So for the first 5 to 10 episodes, I quite often tell people, just go and get a halfway decent headset mic and just fire out some episodes as quickly and easily as you can. And then that's the way to make it sustainable, to build your initial audience. And from there, you can upgrade. Because by that point, you'll be getting feedback on how to do it well, and you'll be getting people that tell you you're doing well, and therefore you're more motivated to keep recording.
I think one of the other suggestions that I heard you on the Marketing Academy podcast, and you talked about having a purpose for your 10 episodes. And I guess that sort of leans towards the approach that you took with having episodic content.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think you mentioned the importance of having something, a consistent thread throughout those first 10.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you can do that, that's great. I suppose that's sort of the strategy, isn't it? That's another thing I work on with a lot of people. I'm sure you do the same with production clients, is figuring out in the early stages, what is it you're looking to get out of this podcast? Because that's what a lot of people miss, isn't it? Like when they're first planning a podcast, they're thinking about monetization, stuff like that. They don't think about the fact that we need to figure out in the first 5 to 10 episodes, what are we looking to get out of these first 10 episodes? Not the whole show. I mean, by all means, plan that if you want, but just plan what you want to get out of the first 10 episodes, whether it's get up to like 200 downloads per episode by episode 10, or whether it's get 5 emails from customers to acknowledge the fact that this is actually reaching people and it's mattering to them. And as long as you have an aim like that, then that gives you a purpose. That gives you something to base to evaluate your efforts on and see whether it is giving you a bit of a return on the time you're putting in. And yeah, if you can manage to have a theme whereby you're trying to achieve something by the end of that 5 to 10 episodes, then that's even better, because then you can work towards that end, and you can have like a nice little ending point there where you're going to say, right, we're going to take a 2-week break and we're going to go and evaluate what's going on. We'll be back in 2 weeks, listeners, and we're going to have this other stuff to give you at that point. I think that's a really nice starting point for a podcast, and just seems to work quite well for a lot of the people that I work with.
And it keeps things manageable from a newbie's perspective, because they feel there's mile markers along the way that they can look to say, okay, if I can make it to this point, then I can focus on the next 10 and so on. Because I think if you just saw it as one endless tunnel, at some point this is where the pod fading would start to kick in.
Yeah, you're dead right there. It just looks insurmountable at that, doesn't it? You've got to be podcasting forever more. And that's what I love about doing season-based, because people come to expect that you're going to take a month off every couple of months. So I tend to do I'm a bit erratic, but sometimes it'll be maybe 2 months worth of episodes and then a month off, and then it'll be 1 month solid. Like I did a month where I did daily episodes for the full month and then took a couple of months off, and people get to know that, and they don't unsubscribe while you're away. They just wait for you to come back because they enjoy the stuff you're putting out.
Yeah, and the other thing that's common now is this concept of binge listening. It sort of comes from the binge watching of Netflix. But a friend of mine recently put out a 10-part series called The Podcast Producers, and I had the benefit of actually being interviewed for a couple of the segments. It's the folks who run Podfly, Corey Coates and Jessica Rhodes. They partnered up and they interviewed a wide range of podcasters, and they sort of just talked about podcasting from the podcast host's perspective, and it was a 10-part series. And it was really, really fascinating, because it's one of the first times that I actually remember binge listening to a podcast. I mean, actually, now that I think about it, I have done that in the past. I remember when I was first introduced to Pat Flynn, I went back and I started listening to the first couple and just kept listening through. And it's a sign of a podcast that's engaging enough for you that you'll actually go ahead and do that.
That sounds really interesting. I'd love to get a link for that if you have a chance.
Yeah, it's really, as a fellow podcast geek, I'm sure you'll appreciate it.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think they're going to do a second season as well.
Excellent. I'll look that up.
So what do you see as you continue to innovate and add seasons to your show? What are going to be the biggest challenges for you as you look to grow?
I think the podcast itself, I think some podcasters reach a point where they think that, you know, they've talked about everything they can within their topic, and they start to struggle to get material out. And I think that, I mean, it doesn't have to happen to everyone by any means. I mean, some of the guys that do How to Podcasting, we've already mentioned Cliff Ravenscraft's doing like 300 odd episodes now. But then he has completely transitioned away from the kind of stuff that he used to do, hasn't he? He's doing a lot more personal stuff now. And so I think that was one of the biggest challenges. It's how to, well, actually, maybe it's a question around what I was about to say. It's how to stick to your initial aims, how to keep on point and how to keep your podcast focused. But actually, maybe it's partly around whether you need to do that, or whether actually it's fine to decide at some point that this isn't working anymore, whether you need to move to something else. I feel like with my podcast, with Podcraft particularly, my aim is to create a set of resources whereby if somebody comes to me and says, I'm looking to set up a podcasting website, how do I do that? I can just go, oh, series four, Podcraft, go and listen to it. Sorry, series three, Podcraft, go and listen to it.
Yeah.
Somebody comes to me, equipment, oh, I just go to series two of Podcraft, go and listen to that. So my aim is to have a series for just about every single question that people ask me that they can just go through. And something that I'm working on just now is turning those seasons into courses as well. So that means that the seasons will be the kind of base content. They'll offer a good amount of information, but actually I will in the future be selling courses based around those seasons, which offer a lot more resources, a lot more in-depth stuff, videos around them, that type of stuff as well. And in fact, that's something I'm going to be talking about at at New Media Europe, the conference in the UK that's on in September. I'm doing a presentation on season-based presentation and podcasting and how that can lead into a big product-based funnel.
So yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, so I think that's the challenge for me. It's building out those seasons. And then once I think I've got a complete set, where do I go from there? Because I don't plan to be doing Podcraft regularly forever, because I don't think it's a show which I'm just going to do random shows just to talk about something that's topical or whatever. I think it's more of an evergreen type approach I want for Podcraft. So maybe I'll have to release a new podcast, which is actually just interviews like this, just talking to people and sort of talking to them about podcasting. Or maybe I need to do a different podcast that will start to reach a different audience that might come into the podcast host, depending on what I'm doing at the time. But yeah, I think in terms of the podcast itself, that's the main challenges I see at the moment.
What's interesting is that one of the things you touched upon was this concept of repurposing your content. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really great because you come from an education background and a lot of that is evergreen. And I think that's fantastic, the fact that you'll be able to refer not only people for generic questions to specific episodes, but hopefully you have some of the content already produced that you're going to use in your course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it forms that base that's there already that you can then build upon, I think.
Something that I've done recently is I took the first 25 episodes and I repurposed it into an ebook.
Excellent.
I just released it, actually. It's called Around the Podcast Campfire. It's on Amazon. It's only $2.99. But it was just sort of an interesting exercise for me. So I took it and I was working with a co-writer to help me organize the content. But what we basically did is take themes for each chapter, and then we would pull out snippets of the conversation that talked about that topic. So there's a chapter on social media and the importance of good equipment, how to amplify your voice. And it was just so funny how all the pieces came together, and I was able to use snippets from all 25 interviews in there. And that was a lot of fun. That was a lot of fun to do.
That's a really nice idea. How's that going?
Slow.
Sure.
As with all things. And I think I probably didn't pay close attention to the ebook marketing 101 that's out there. And you're supposed to release it for free for a long period of time and just get people excited about it. And the thing is, I was sitting on it for such a long time because I was waiting and to release it in the right way. And it's sort of like what you talked about with the perfection syndrome of trying to get it out and do it perfect the right way. And I fell prey to that trap. And I had the ebook sitting on my computer for a good 2 to 3 months before I said, wait a minute, I'd rather have it out there than not have it out released in the quote unquote perfect release strategy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes. Yeah, I think that's the thing. People just hold off for perfect conditions, but it never happens.
No, never does.
But that's a really interesting idea. Have you thought about releasing it as an audiobook?
Yeah, I can do that as well. So I'll have to find someone with maybe Scarlett Johansson can read it for me.
That'd be nice if you get to meet her as well.
That shouldn't be too hard, right? We're famous podcasters, right?
Oh, exactly. Yeah, we're in the media. No worries.
I'll let you know how that plays out.
Yeah.
So as we wrap up, what has got you most excited about podcasting in the coming months or coming year?
In the coming months, the thing that's got me most excited right now is just the course, actually. So the course that I'm developing that I want to get out there is a kind of, it's a beginner's well, what is it now? Do you know, I'm still kind of developing the concept around it, but it's going to be a guide to getting started, but beyond that a little bit as well. So from start to a little bit after launch. So launching and maybe promoting for the first couple of months. And it deals with a lot of the stuff that I've talked about in terms of getting past that perfectionism, planning for your first 10 episodes, strategy, launch strategy, all that kind of stuff. And we'll have loads of resources in there too. So I'm really excited to get that out there because people keep asking me about it because I've talked about it on my mailing list. I've talked about it with lots of my sort of contacts. So I really just want to get the damn thing out there now and on the market. But I suppose other than that, more generally, I think, you mentioned the whole tools coming out now, the money coming into podcasting. I'm really interested to see what happens with all of this because I think that there's a lot of stuff in podcasting that's broken in terms of listening. So one of my missions at the moment is to try and get more people listening to podcasts. So never mind making money out of it or whatever. I just want more people to enjoy podcasts and get into the medium and all that kind of stuff. So everyone that I meet that at some point in the conversation, I'll bore them with the question. So do you know what a podcast is? Do you listen to podcasts? And I'm trying to figure out ways to get people into listening more easily. So I've created an area on the podcast host called The Listener's Guide, and you can find it at thepodcasthost.com if you like. I can't remember what the address is. That's a bit useless at the moment. But yeah, I could maybe send you a link
if you're
interested in having a look. But it's The Listener's Guide to Podcasting. And if you're, I mean, obviously, if anybody's listened to this, they're already a listener. But if there's anyone that you know that you want to get into podcasting, send them along there. And I'd love to hear your thoughts on how well it works and what's missing, what problems people have when starting to listen to a podcast, because I'm putting up guides there around how to use, how to subscribe in Android, for example, apps that you can use in Android, like video guides to getting subscribed, getting started, Apple guides, that type of stuff. And I'm also trialing these things I'm calling pod packs, which is essentially an RSS feed, which contains a curated set of episodes around a particular topic. So I've got, in one of them, I've got 30 episodes, which are what I think is a really good beginner's guide to getting started in online business. So I've got loads of episodes in there from various different podcasters, like Pat Flynn, you mentioned, James Schramko, I've got an episode of his in there. So there are things like getting started in email marketing, using video for marketing, content marketing strategies, that kind of thing. And what the intention is that I can meet people at a networking event and I can say, do you podcast? Do you listen to podcasting? And they go, no. I say, well, let me show you this app. I'll get that on their phone and then I'll subscribe them to that pod pack. And that will be a total introduction to 30 different podcasters, 30 different shows. And it'll help that listener to get into listening to podcasts. And it'll also help everyone that's on that show, on that pod pack. So all these podcasts will hopefully get more subscribers from this person who maybe enjoys some of the episodes. So I think that's what's getting me excited just now, is trying to get more people listening, and the fact that it is becoming a bit more mainstream, so actually people are willing to take the time to do it when I try and persuade them to.
It's funny that you take that approach, and it seems so obvious, but a lot of people sort of ignore the listener, right? Maybe it's a testament to your background as an educator.
Yeah, it just seems the much larger audience, doesn't it? Like you're trying to get people into making podcasts, but that doesn't grow the pool of that doesn't grow the audience pool at all, does it? It's the listeners we need. So
one of my strategies has been to I do a lot of ride sharing here, so
sure.
I imagine it's common there as well, at Lyft and Uber.
Yeah, definitely.
So every time I tend to go more with Lyft, but it's inevitably I always ask the driver, so have you listened to, what do you do in your spare time when you're waiting to pick up passengers? Do you listen to a podcast? And I just carry business cards, and I have a business card just for the podcast. And I said, well, you should check this one out. And it's about half-half. Some don't listen, but the ones that do listen are able to rattle off their favorites right away.
Yeah, excellent. That's the thing, isn't it? Podcasting is so addictive. As soon as you get somebody listening to one show, they just fall into like another 15, 20 shows. So it's a bit of a cascade.
Yeah, and I love it when people tell me that I don't listen to podcasts because I don't find any that I've found interesting enough for me. And I said, well, you must have a hobby or something that you're a fan of. And then they say, well, I like photography. And then I grab their phone and I find them like very, very easily like a dozen podcasts on photography. And they're like, oh, wow. Yeah, okay, I'll check these out.
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, that's kind of the idea behind the pod packs. So I'll hopefully do one for loads of different topics, maybe a photography one. So for example, I could find 10 different shows on photography, find their most popular episodes, which will take people through, you know, shutter speed and aperture and all that kind of caper. And so people can just subscribe to this one feed. They can find all these different shows and they can choose which ones they like the best and then subscribe to those actual shows. So yeah, I've had a bit of good feedback from it so far, but yeah, hopefully build it out a bit.
Very interesting. I like the concept of podpacks. I'm sure that you might have to trademark that.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
Well, Colin, thank you so much. As you can imagine, when two podcast geeks get on the horn, that we could probably talk for another couple hours on the topic.
Yeah, definitely.
But I really appreciate you making the time to come on the show.
No, it's been a pleasure to chat. Like you say, it's always good to talk about podcasting, and I'm sure we can have another round in a few months and talk about developments, because I think there is, like you say, when you're talking about exciting times, I think this is pretty one of the most exciting times in podcasts for a long time. It just seems to be so much happening just now. So
exactly. A lot going on. So what's the best, I know you mentioned a website, but just as a recap, what's the best way, social media, website, for people to track you down?
Sure. Thepodcasthost.com is the easiest place. That's thepodcasthost.com. And I can also be found at podcraft.net for the podcast, and the podcast host on Twitter as well. So I'm pretty much the podcast host just about anywhere.
Sounds
but yeah,
good.
I would love to hear from anybody, feedback on anything we've chatted about. So yeah, that'd be cool.
So I usually like to throw a hashtag reference in at the end of the episodes just to see if people are paying attention. So I think what we could do is a hashtag podpack.
Great. Okay. Excellent.
Is that PODPACK?
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
That's it.
Well, it is now, if it wasn't before.
Yeah.
Hashtag podpack if you made it this far. To let Colin and I know that you have nothing else better to do in your day than to listen to two folks talk about podcasting.
Exactly. Cool. Well, yeah, great to speak to you, Harry.
Okay, take care. Have a great day.
You too.
If you want more of everything podcasting, from equipment guides to podcasting courses, head over to thepodcasthost.com. And don't forget to give us some feedback. Leave a comment at podcraft.net or send Colin a tweet at @thepodcasthost. Thanks for listening.